Welcome to the second series of She Talks Tech from We Are Tech Women. My name is Vanessa Vallely, CEO and founder of We Are The City. In series two, we'll be bringing you more of the same. Great tech topics, emerging tech, what's going on post-COVID, from some of the industry's most fantastic speakers. I can't wait to bring you this second series, and I really hope that you get as much out of it as you have over the last 8 months.
Without being able to communicate with you, now we'll be able to share with you their informational properties, meaning that which they know that without being digital, they could never let you know.
Today we hear from the amazing Inma Martinez. Inma is a digital pioneer and AI scientist. Starting her career in banking at Goldman Sachs in the 90s and shifting to entrepreneurship in the early 2000s, Inma has been at the forefront of some of the most incredible tech discoveries. These include the development of mobile internet services, AI, personalization and prediction of consumer behaviors, video and music streaming, intelligent wearables, and the connected car and smart living. Inma will be discussing why we started teaching machines how to think and how advances in computation is not the end of humanity, but the start of our true nature and cognition purpose.
Hello, my name is Inma Martinez. I'm delighted to be able to cover a very important topic that's in everyone's mind and that for a long while now, it's been part of what we are trying to comprehend and understand in regards to what is approaching us from the future, and that is machine intelligence. And what I will try to do is, as an AI scientist and as someone who pioneered AI consumer practices back in the early 2000s, artificial intelligence is not a threat if we use it for good. So what I will be doing is sharing with you exactly what it really is, what is its potentiality, and also which are the areas where we have been using artificial intelligence to create goodness for the world and benefits for society. So without further ado, I will just delve into the topic. Artificial sounds like something fake and very alien, but machine intelligence is the reality of what we do. What we do when we teach machines how to do tasks for us. Machine intelligence is something that is helping many, many sectors go to new levels of innovation, be able to create new products and services that we could not do with our human biological brains. And it all starts from a very, very clear baseline, which is exploration. We are making machines more intelligent because there is still loads and loads of things to explore in the sciences. And I always start talking about AI by showing a picture of this very young gentleman that no one recognizes until I do this, and then everyone says, oh my goodness, that is Darwin. But truthfully, this is the Darwin that created what we now know about humanity. Darwin was just 22 years of age when he was brave enough to jump on board of a ship that circumnavigated Earth up to 5 years. And this is when he explored islands and he did drawings and he gathered all his knowledge as to what human beings are and what the origins of the species were. And this is what he became, an explorer, but also a scientist. And that explains why even today we are exploring not just Earth, but outer space. This is why we are going to Mars. This is why we are putting robots there and we are advancing scientific projects, trying to understand, could there be a life for us outside of the Earth? And explorers always dare to go into the unknown. These, for example, are Humboldt and Bonpland, a German and a French explorer join forces. And although they seem to be posing for the cover of GQ, really their life was a lot more arduous than that. They learned to meet with indigenous tribes that no one had ever met before, and they learned from them, and they went on top of volcanoes, and literally they just walked around 9,000 kilometers of mountain and mountain regions in South America. Sometimes putting their lives in risk. For example, they discovered that at high altitude, you start lacking oxygen. And they did it without any harpoons and any tools, and they almost killed themselves, which is what the astronauts at the International Space Station do. This is Tim, the British astronaut, testing. Lots of medical tests and scientific tests go aboard this ship. So humanity is teaching machines how to think, because we have never stopped thinking and we have never stopped exploring. It is a natural move that we created forward to our advance. And why artificial intelligence works, why we're able to teach machines, is because we've been storing data since the very, very beginning of times. How humans learn is by learning concepts, information, and creating records of that. And we've been storing data for ages, up until, you know, someone really famous, Edward Snowden, walked out of the NSA's offices in Hawaii with a pen drive, just like that in the picture, and the whole world learned that governments spy on people and capture their data. Data is what you need to be able to teach a machine anything. And what is happening today with digitization is that we have turned into data absolutely everything that there is. So geolocations, pictures, images, video files, sound files, everything now has a digital representation. And this is when we're able to create simulations. And not just that, you know, in scientific spheres, but in our daily life, the objects that laid there without being able to communicate with you now will be able to share with you their informational properties, meaning that which they know that without being digital, they could never let you know. So our lives are moving towards a plethora of informational sources, so big and exponential, that we need machines to help us understand it. So that is the connection between why we teach machines to actually make sense of reality, because reality now is an ocean of data. And how long have we been teaching machines how to think? Well, pretty long. I mean, the birth of statistics in the 50s is what we consider, you know, the first moments in which we ask machines to deliver tasks, statistical analysis. And then in the 60s, we started teaching machines to learn about context and outcomes, and scenario planning was born. And scenario planning, which was initially used by governments to understand, you know, should they go into a war or not, moved towards the corporate section and moved towards, you know, the planning of cities. Where should we build new flats based on the areas that we need to put people there, or schools or universities? So scenario planning became a tool to actually plan for the future. And when we approached the late 90s, something else happened to machines. And that was when we asked machines to pay attention to what we do, what we shop, and to understand what we like, and to even make suggestions. And this was the famous algorithm that Amazon launched in 1998. People who bought this book also bought that other book, is a suggestion. But it's not yet super automated. It basically is an algorithm that draw conclusions. Yeah. And where we are today is making machines autonomous. That is, once you teach a machine how to do something and the machine infallibly always gets it right, you let the machine work it out. And no one is supervising that, because the machine has been taught to do one thing and one thing only, and it does it very well. For example, when you land at an airport, the gate is chosen by an automated system, not by a human, because it would be really, really hard that one person would be controlling all the takeoffs and landings and choosing gates across multiple terminals. These are the arduous things where machines come to help us. But we're moving into better and better machine thinking, and that is when machines are able to predict the future. And it sounds a bit esoteric, but this is a practice that has been ongoing, for example, in the financial markets. In the 90s, when I was training in banking, I was an analyst looking at potential outcomes as to, you know, do we think the stock will go up or down? And you use a lot of predictions. So again, you use mathematics. And math is your best friend. And math is a very, very old discipline. So we feel really comfortable teaching and sharing with machines algorithms, so the machine, you know, in turn begins to analyze things. But the areas where we are evolving are now inclusive of deep learning. That is when we are teaching machines, not with math, but we're teaching machines how to think like a human brain with a neural network. And what we have noticed is that machines have a huge potentiality to explore other dimensions that we cannot conceive in our brains. So human brains are able to see things in two, in three dimensions, but beyond that is virtually impossible. This is where machines come in. And this is where we're able to create machines that can deduct and prevent things and also have situational awareness. For example, the future cars that we'll be buying in about 5 years will have situational awareness. That is, they will know what is coming to them and what to do. And although cars are almost fully automated today and they make lots of decisions so that we don't get into an accident, some people fear that what if someone was to teach machines evil things? So my answer is yes, that is the problem that we need to solve. Not a machine, but evil people. So today, the growth of our businesses, for example, this is an image of Inditex, you know, the holding company that owns Zara and many retail brands. This is their second data center. Not just one, but two. And the company knows exactly what happens in all of the stores, even if you leave the light on. And why is that? Because the exponential growth of businesses are requiring that we have this visibility of what goes on. And that is where AI and data move into business and into sectors. It really is a tool that you use to have some kind of understanding of what goes on. And cities, remember when people talked about smart cities, and really what it was is cities that know how to manage traffic and garbage collection and have some kind of level of automation. The cities that are emerging now are data-driven cities. This is Boston, for example. And what Boston decided to do was to publicly put all of their public data. So how many books are loaned at the library? How many crime is happening? How many Uber taxis are being circulating in the city? But they're using this to show the citizens how they fix the roads, how they make the city safer and more fair. For example, when Uber tried to function in Boston, because the city was data-driven, they noticed that they only send taxis to the rich neighborhoods. So the mayor of Boston forced Uber to send Ubers everywhere, and especially working-class neighborhoods, whenever anybody needed it. They were able to run the city better because the data showed them what they were missing out, the secret information that is invisible to our human eyes. And data can do amazing things, especially for the things we do not see. This is a very interesting project that I came across at the University of Colorado at Boulder, where I sometimes guest lecture. The students decided to take data that was coming from satellites. You know, satellites project thousands and thousands of imagery of what goes on Earth, and then you can use them for whatever you need to. What the students realize is that in the areas controlled by ISIS, the oil rigs began to disappear in large quantities. So from 1 year to the next, in 2014, 86,000 oil rigs were flaring, and the year after the number went down to 36,000, and the year after that to 14,000. So what they concluded was that ISIS was not getting funded from oil business, but from extortion. And they were able to pass the information to the CIA. This is what happens when human brains that are creative and imaginative use machines to reveal unknown unknowns, to reveal that no one is even paying attention to. So in the world that I live in and the world that I build, which is machines helping humans, this is one of the biggest benefits that we're extracting from teaching machines how to think and analyze data. When Garry Kasparov in the 90s dared to play against an intelligent machine operated and trained by IBM, it was called Big Blue, he won the first year, but the year after he lost. And when you talk to Garry and you say, Garry, why did you lose? As I did when I met him, he said, the machine saw my mistake. But also, machines that are trained to have a force brute approach to tasks, and the tasks are binary, meaning good, bad, zero, one, win, lose, because that is an extreme computational environment, the machine will always win, because our brains are not to perform computational massive tasks. Our brains are for something else. So whereas some people saw that as the end of humanity, the only thing that it pinpointed was the end of the Mensa society, where you are only valued if you have a massive IQ. Well, that is 74 years late to the neuroscience party. Right now, what the neuroscientists are discovering is that we have multiple brains and that our cognitive functions are very rich and are not just computational or based on IQ. We have neoteny. And neoteny is one of the areas of my research. By trying to teach machines how to think, I came across what the neuroscientists were doing and discovering. And neoteny is the enormous, curious, and fun and abstract curiosity that really formed the basis of our brain and who and what we are as a being. We started working on two legs and our brain began to grow and we were moved by this insane curiosity. And neoteny is what makes scientists want to explore and historians want to write and inventors and people want to develop their skills and become leaders and do much better for themselves. This is the fuel of human cognition and human existence, our curiosity that is full of creativity. So we are entering an era that is leaving the computation to the machines because our brains really are richer, much more. And we're entering a momentum in which the humans will show who they truly are, emotionally intelligent beings. And the force brute will be something that machines will deliver because, honestly, at physical level, it's impossible that we are able to handle those calculations. And the sectors will flourish. This is an image from British Petroleum. It's how the oil sector manages to understand what goes on in their places where they prospect. All of those tiny points are data points. This is a visualization. We cannot visualize petaflops and terabytes of data, but a machine can. And that's how we can see. And in the car industry, which is what I've worked many times, we don't build the cars in real prototypes. We make simulations. Because that's when we can put the car under extremes and really stress the forces and make sure that this car really breaks, even in situations that we know will never happen. We really want to make it 100%, you know, proper. And the best of them all, image diagnosis. In the near future, and when I say this, I'm talking about the next 4-6 years, if not sooner, you will have image-based scans, MIR tests. And you will want a machine to detect if you have cancer markers or not. not a human doctor, because our eyes are very easy to deceive. This is the worst of the senses. And in animal healthcare, you know, veterinarians, you know, have really, really hard trouble trying to understand chronic pain in animals, because anyone that has a cat knows that a cat always shows you the same face, whether they're happy, when they're in pain. So now with AI, we can detect tiny changes in their facial expressions. And now we know if they suffer chronic pain or not. The ethical world is moving not just into the human area, but also how we look after animals and nature. This is a huge wave that is moving alongside our deployment of AI. And as we now are very familiar during COVID-19 times, pharmaceutical companies for the last 5 years have paired up with AI companies, most of them startups, to develop the next drug therapies. It is something that has slashed the 10 years that used to take to really create a new drug therapy to almost 5. And also the costs, which are unsurmountable when you do things in a real life in petri dishes. And even companies like, you know, Callaway building golf clubs. Well, when you ask a machine to handle the design that has to be efficient when it comes to physics, you know, you hit a ball really hard. The machine, when you give the machine a computational task, a quantifiable task, is able to also tell you what shape should things have. So this is not really turning the machine into a Salvador Dali or a painter. The machine is literally using industrial design, because it's, you know, when you design buildings like an architect or industrial things, you use quite a lot of math and physical things. So the machine comes to your help. So who do you think is teaching Google robots to recognize things? You. Every time you use CAPTCHA, you're teaching the algorithm to learn. And I'm mentioning this because about 2 weeks ago, in late May, both Google and IBM stopped trying to develop image recognition of human faces. And the answer is because human faces are not just objects. We recognize who we look at because we see this person with also our emotional brain. We recognize facial expressions, not contours like a statue. And this is a very important inflection point, because these two companies really, really tried for many years and they finally have given up. There are things that machines cannot do. And this is one of the best maps of human-machine collaborations that I have found. There are things that we would let the machines do because these are machine quantifiable tasks. And the machines are really, really good at making zero mistakes in those environments. But there will be other things in which emotional intelligence will be needed. And those are the things that we will best suited to do. So without overextending myself, I want to remind you, the future is one where you expand your creativity. In every job in the future, you will be asked to have social skills, imagination, a sense of wonder, exploration, bravery towards a task, because all of that comes from your understanding of reality based on what your entire brain system, not just the neocortex, but your gut feeling, your memory, and how you build a realization of what life is. So we're entering into an era of splendor, not an era in which the machines will annihilate us. What we need to create is better regulation.
Inma, thank you so much for spending time with us at She Talks Tech. I cannot thank you enough for being one of our guests. If you want to find out more about Inma, you can find her on LinkedIn or on Twitter. A huge thank you to all of you for listening. We really appreciate it. Don't forget to join us next Wednesday for another episode of She Talks Tech.